All right, everyone. Clinton Stark from Stark Insider. It's the morning after, and this might take a few days to recover from, at least until the Sharks win their next game. That was a pretty brutal game last night. I've got Aaron Houston, film director, writer, up in Vancouver with me. How you doing there, Aaron? I bet you're in better spirits than I am down here in San Jose.
Yeah, I think I'm doing better than you.
I don't know where to begin. This is the kind of game where, if you're a Vancouver fan, it's going exactly to script. I mean, the team looked awesome. They've got a 2-0 series lead. They crushed San Jose last night, 7-3. You know, I just lost track of the score. And if you're a Sharks fan, it's a disaster in the making. It's not that they lost, because Vancouver's a very good team. It's the way they lost. It really, what people are calling an embarrassment. It was really, really bad. And the Sharks are not a bunch of no-names. We have superstars on the team, just like Vancouver does. And to lose like that in a Western Conference final, I mean, I don't know. I don't know where to begin. So, first of all, what's your reaction on the game?
Well, I think, you know, for the first while, it was good. But I think that sort of the wheels came off. I think that you know, they sort of finally got to the Emmy. I think that Eager, is that his name, Eager?
Ben Eager.
Yeah. I think that they need to put a leash on that guy, because, you know, he caused a few of the goals at the end of the game there. And I think that, I mean, there's sort of two ways that it can go. It can sort of continue along this path, or something like this can sort of energize a team too, kind of the way that, you know, Roenick called out Marlowe there. If you suffer, you know, an embarrassing loss like this, that can be sort of a motivation to get back on track sometimes. You know, so it's guys like Heatley that need to sort of step up, and he was non-existent last night, you know, and that he scores 40, 50 goals a year sometimes, you know, so.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that, I think the next game will be really interesting, because we'll be back in San Jose, and it's loud in that building, and, you know, Luongo has had a tough time in that building, and so it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it'll, you know, I have a feeling that San Jose is going to come back from that, you know. I think that there's going to be, you know, once you get to the Western Conference Finals, it's kind of, you know, that slap in the face that they took last night. I think they'll come back with some more heart in the next game.
You would have to think so. These guys, if you would think they had any kind of pride, you know, as just hockey players, forget the fact that they make millions of dollars, you know, it's embarrassing to lose like that at any level. And, you know, especially in a Western Conference final. So you're right. I think they will come back pretty strong, at least in the first period. But the real storyline, at least in last night's game for me, was Ben Eager that you touched on. And you said it perfectly. They need to put a leash on this guy. And I kind of point the finger at McClellan for that. I mean, it's not Eager's fault necessarily, because that's the way he plays. He's a bulldog. He goes out there and he's trying to rile the team, and he's going to make these costly mistakes, and it cost the Sharks. He was in the penalty box for a goal, and then he scores a goal that really didn't mean anything at the end of the game, and then he stands over Luongo and taunts him like, you know, like he's a relative of Sean Avery or something, you know?
Yeah.
And there you are with a hugely talented team, with Marlowe, with Heatley, with Thornton, with Boyle, and it goes on and on down the roster. And yet all eyes were on this guy, Ben Eager, who was running around checking people. And then also you had a guy like Joe Thornton, and I didn't like the way he was slashing Kessler behind. I don't know if you saw the replays. He kept, you know, they weren't really serious, but I guess he was slashing his hand and then slashing his legs behind the play.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a team that's unhinged. It's pretty rattled. And to Vancouver's credit, man, what a talented team. They can score all the way through, and they're playing four lines in last night's game, and that really showed their depth. And so it's one of those questions, is it really that Vancouver is really that good, and that could be very well the case, or is it the Sharks are just really that slower, you know, and not that much, can't keep up with Vancouver? It's hard to say.
Yeah, it's funny, because Vancouver's starting to play like they did during the regular season. Like, this is how they played. They were their stellar team all year long, and then they kind of slowed down in the playoffs a little bit, but they seem to be sort of opening it up in the series, which is kind of what I thought was going to happen just because of the style of play that both teams have. But I thought San Jose was going to sort of match that a bit more. You know, like, I thought that they would be sort of high-flying, but for some reason they seem to be on their toes, you know, or on their heels quite a bit. You know, like, we're always sort of in their end, shooting in their end, and, you know, that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I mean, their backs are sort of against the wall now, so, you know, I mean, it's not 3-0, but, you know, up 2-0 in a series in the Western Conference Final, like, you gotta come back with a lot of heart. And so I sort of expect to see that in the next game for sure. And
right,
I think you're right, too, like, they need to play a complete game. Because they play a really good first period and a good second period, and then it's just both games in the third period, they got completely dominated by Vancouver. So, you know.
Although the scoreboard in this case is a little deceptive. People would say, well, the Sharks were playing a good game up until the end of the second. They lost it in the third. And that's true. I mean, Vancouver was leading only 3-2 at the end of the second period, and, you know, they scored 4 goals in the third and just blew out the Sharks. But the second period, if you watch the game, Vancouver scored only 1 goal in that period, but they could have scored a lot more. The ice was clearly tilted in their favor. The Sharks didn't get their first shot on net until, I think it was about 6.5 minutes, and halfway through the period they had like 2 shots on net. Vancouver really, really suffocated the Sharks, and if you're watching it, of course, if you're a Sharks fan, it's very frustrating. Like you were saying, Heatley and a bunch of the forwards, they're just invisible. You're like, what? Where are these guys? You know, and Vancouver is just dominating the play.
Well, up until the third period last night, it's Niemi that's really kept the Sharks in the games. Like, even the third period in the first game, Vancouver completely dominated. And, you know, like I think I mentioned last time, they had like 38 shots, and then San Jose had like 25 block shots or something. So, I mean, they're getting a lot of looks at Niemi and the goal and stuff. And he just sort of, you know, they finally got to him last night. Which is, you know, that could have very well happened in the first game as well if Miami hadn't been so hot, you know.
Right.
So I think they need to play more completely as a team and better defense and create more opportunities for themselves too. Because as soon as there doesn't seem to be a lot of you know, offense happening for San Jose, which is strange because they have, you know, they have three of the premier scorers in the league.
Right, and I think you're right. I think Niemi, and this is hard to say, when you let up 7 goals, I still think he was the best Shark in last night's game. At least he was the most consistent. He seems to be the one, he made some amazing saves, yet, you know, he let in 7 goals, but that's because of everyone else in front of him. And so the good news for the Sharks is, hey, we got a goaltender that's just playing really, really well. And when that's the case in the playoffs, anything can happen. And so I don't know what the plane ride was like back from Vancouver to San Jose for this team, but, you know, I can imagine the conversations. This might be the one where McClellan, he may not need to do anything because these guys are grown-ups and they're professionals, and Thornton and Marlowe, and you would expect someone to stand up, and, you know, and these guys know what they need to do. But having said that, they've been in this situation before, and yet, you know, nothing happens. So I think the game 3 on Friday night in the HP Pavilion is going to be, it's going to be a very interesting series to see what happens there.
Yeah, for sure. I think if they can get, you know, I mean, that's the thing. And most, you know, Stanley Cup wins or runs in the last, you know, 10, 15 years has been with a team that has a hot goalie. So it's kind of a shame because Niemi is playing really well. And if the team played, you know, even 3/4 of the heart that they should, they'd be, I think, doing a lot better in this series.
Hey, and kudos to Bieksa for the Gordie Howe hat trick, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't believe that he dropped the gloves. That Marlowe dropped the gloves and things. Yeah.
Who do you think provoked? I didn't get that clearly. Who do you think provoked that? I mean, was it Marlowe?
I don't know. I don't know there, but I think it's funny that that Marlowe, ever since he was called out by Roenick, I mean, he's scored the last 3 games now, I think. And I got into a fight last night. Like, he seems to have a bit of a fire going in him now. So, yeah, it's interesting to see. That's why I say, I think, you know, after an embarrassing loss like that, it's kind of the same thing. And, you know, they'll, you know, most likely bounce back from that and play a little harder and with a little more pride, you know.
Right. All right, as always, we let's shift gears and let's talk just for a few more minutes before you end the today's podcast and talk about what you're up to on your film Sunflower Hour. Is that the only project you're working on right, Aaron, right now, or do you juggle multiple film projects at the same time?
Well, I sort of do. I mean, I have other things in development that I'm writing and that kind of stuff. But because I'm a full-time single parent too, film takes a lot of your time and energy. I really have time to focus on one project at a time. But I have a script that I wrote that was in development with Telefilm last year, and so still writing that and different scripts in different stages kind of thing. But there's a lot to do with the film as well for marketing, like, you know, getting our website going and getting our trailer done and clips, and there's a lot of work that goes into it. So
right, you've got your Facebook page up and running, and that's pretty active too. There's some pretty interesting updates on there on your actors and so forth. Now, what happens next? I know you're in post-production. You've been working on, I think, sound and so forth. Explain the next few steps in terms of completing the project and getting your film out to the market.
Well, we finish our sound up June 6th and 7th, and then after that we do the sort of final output so that it can, you know, be played in theaters and make DVDs and all that kind of stuff. And then from there we start doing the festival circuit. And on the festival circuit, it'll depend on, you know, how the critics receive it, how the audience receives it, whether we go traditional distribution, which means, you know, like the, you know, like a Warner Brothers or, you know, smaller distribution companies, or whether we do self-distribution. So it's kind of interesting. I mean, there's not necessarily, film is one of those things where it's not like, you know, you go to school to become a doctor and then you become a doctor kind of thing. Like film, there's so many different avenues. Like nobody has the same story, you know what I mean? There's no scientific way to go about it. So a lot of it has to do with chance and how you get your project out there and share it to the world. And nowadays things are so different than they used to be that there's a lot more opportunity, you know. It's hard to sort of zero in on which direction you should go in sometimes, right? So
right, it's like, you know, opportunity can come from anywhere, and I guess it can be disguised as anything, and you just have to be ready for it. And now on the film itself, I know you're using Final Cut Pro. It's a digital process. When that's done, do you put it onto film? Do you have it, you know, converted to film, or do you wait until you're in a film festival and then have it, you know, transformed or converted?
Well, actually, nowadays you don't necessarily have to up-res to like 35mm film. Because most theaters have digital projectors now, so you usually do like an HD cam master for a project like ours. And then if you get traditional distribution, they could do a blow up to 35mm. But again, like, you know, we did our color correction at Technicolor, and it looks great, you know, and it'll look great. Gets up res to 1080, so it'll look good in the theater as well. So the sort of film print thing isn't necessarily the way everybody goes nowadays, especially
that's a big advantage for you, right? I mean, because that traditionally, I think, is a pretty expensive process.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah,
so
it's really expensive, and especially like even a lot of the bigger distribution companies nowadays are shying away from it. That's why they, you know, had that big sort of argument with the theater chains to get digital projectors, because it's so much cheaper just to make an HD tape than to ship like four reels of film and the cost of the film and scratches on the film and all that kind of stuff, right? So, I mean, film, to me, I'm kind of like, I'm of the mind that film still has that magic quality that they haven't yet quite mastered in the digital realm, but it's getting pretty good, and it's a lot cheaper, you know? Like, it's possible for people like myself to make films now where it wasn't so necessarily, you know, 15, 20 years ago. You know, it was really difficult to do because you know, just the cost of processing film and how much it costs to make and cut and all that kind of stuff, right? You can basically make a feature film on your laptop now.
Right.
There's no more Steam backs or, you know, all the sort of tools that they used to use before the digital age, right?
Right. The barriers to entry are so low, and a lot of people have said, well, there's going to be a lot more films out there. It's going to be a lot more competitive, and I think some of that is true, but I think more than ever now, it probably points to the importance of having, you know, great quality scripts, you know, having a really good story and having really good actors, because those things are really what makes a great film.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what, you know, an audience is engages in. You know, I sort of agree. Like, you know, people say, you know, too many people are making films now. It's too easy to make a film. Well, you still have to sift through all of the films and find the good ones, you know.
Right.
But now there's opportunities for people who might not have ever gotten an opportunity to make a film before because they're, you know, socially awkward or don't have the right connections or whatever kind of thing, but are talented as filmmakers that can make their micro-budget film and get known that way rather than, you know, schmoozing at parties or, you know, doing those kinds of things, right? Where somebody had to give you an opportunity before, you can sort of create your own opportunity now, which is pretty cool.
All right, well, that's director Aaron Houston once again joining us. And Aaron, the film is Sunflower Hour, and it's a mockumentary. And I'll read right from your Facebook page here. It's a mockumentary about the seedy underbelly of puppeteering and what it really takes to make it in children's television.
Yeah.
I got to love it. Sounds great. So thanks for joining us again. I just can't wait till tomorrow, and tomorrow is Friday, game 3, and I'm hoping we can get on the call after that game and have a different conversation. Maybe
For sure.
You'll have to defend the Canucks performance. That would be my ideal situation after game 3.
Will be which?
That you would defend and explain how come the Canucks played so poorly tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah. 7-3 San Jose tomorrow night,
Right. Yeah, we need to become the Chicago Blackhawks for you guys. Round 3.
Yeah. All right. I mean, that's the thing as a Canucks fan too, is like we don't breathe a sigh of relief until it's over.
It's never over until it's out of the thing.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, thanks Aaron for joining us. Thanks everyone.
Thank
we'll talk to you again after next game.